HeritageRadioNetwork.org is dedicated to providing the most up-to-date information and news on the food industry. Interviews with chefs and in-depth pieces on food systems take listeners literally from the farm to the fork. Can you hear this anywhere else? Nope. Press the donate button on our website and learn how you can become a founding member and support the station.
Hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio, a radio show about young farmers, featuring young farmers with conversations between young farmers and for the benefit of the future of agriculture. Hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio. And today I'm on the phone with Jessica from Vermont, who's running the UVM Beginning Farmer Program there, yet another program made possible by our land grant system and the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Project, which is funded by the Farm Bill. How's it going, Jessica? How's the weather up there?
Oh, geez, we're doing good. It is a little bit cooler than it has been, which is a bit of a relief, and very rainy right now, which we definitely needed some rain. It's been unseasonably hot and dry.
Too hot.
Yeah,
Way too hot. would you mind just describing your program that you have there in the basic organizational way?
Sure. So the project that I help coordinate is the Vermont New Farmer Project. It is funded, like you said, by the BFRDP grant from the USDA, and it is a collaboration of the organizations in Vermont that serve new farmers, and our hope is to streamline access to resources and services for new farmers so that their time from startup to being a successful, sustainable business is shortened. We want to increase, the success rate and the time it takes to become successful.
So you, like us, are working in that critical moment of the beginning of the career, and working to support that person staying in farming and not getting frustrated and burnt out and tired and grumpy.
Right.
And what are some of the challenges that you are identifying most frequently in the farmers who are taking your course as factors for success and also the troubles?
Yeah, I mean, we're working with a real diversity of farmers here in Vermont, and it's interesting because each type of person who comes to farming has different challenges. So when we've looked at, we have our website and, an email list and people sign up for more information, and when we kind of look at those people who are signing up for us, we're finding that, 40% are in that under 35 age group, but about 40% are also over 45. And so those two groups of new farmers have different skill sets and different needs. We look at, critical access areas. So obviously access to production knowledge and experience on the farm. There's also access to land is a real critical issue, access to capital and access to markets. And so we really look at each individual that's coming to us and assessing, what do they have? Often farmers who are coming who are in the over 45 range might have better access to capital. They have equity. They have some resources they're bringing. They often have land that they're bringing. And so what we're working with them on is really access to production knowledge and skills. For the younger farmers, access to capital and access to land are typically the biggest barriers. They're out there working on farms, they're apprentices, they're interns. A lot of them have, moved into farm management positions. And then they want to start their own enterprise, and helping them address, the capital and land issues become really critical.
The thing that that's really become clear to me is how ill-positioned many young people are for the kinds of negotiations that they would need to pursue to get sustainable tenure, ill-positioned in terms of their history as an employee. If you're farming, if you start young farming, then you're farming in different regions every season, and you're a seasonal employee and earning not very much. And then, in all likelihood, you don't own a home, so you haven't got a bunch of equity. And that, you know, while many pieces of land, you know, would conceivably be available to you, that because you're moving around so much in the early part of your career, you aren't making the kinds of community relationships that would help you connect with those landowners.
Mm-hmm.
Could you maybe talk a little bit about, so we Greenhorns are working now with New York State Ag Mediation Service to basically teach workshops on negotiation and professional communication. Because
yeah,
we felt like
that was coming through.
What are some of the ways that you see people making those linkages and kind of overcoming that core challenge of moving from kind of a vagrant farm worker to settled, committed to a particular community farm operator?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that commitment is a key word there. And you know, what we encourage new farmers to see the progression towards owning their own farm business as a kind of a long-term objective. And the idea that, you know, going from, you know, landless and without a farm business to owning that farm is going to take more than a year. And having a commitment to a place and to a location, you know, where someone decides they, you know, this is it, this is where I want to farm, to start building those relationships and building those connections with your community, with, you know, the service providers in your area, with the resources that are available to you so that you can build those connections and start, you know, making the relationships that are going to make that future land ownership or land tenure, whether, you know, leasing and, you know, all of those alternative ideas are really working here in Vermont, and it's pretty exciting. So, but looking at it as, you know, a 5-year plan versus a 1-year plan to get to that place. And I think that we have a great resource online called The Guide to Financing the Community Supported Farm, and that really looks at how a lot of, or several farmers, there's some case studies in there, but how farmers are trying to finance their farm operations through alternative capital. And there's a lot of exciting things happening on that front, you know, that isn't going through the traditional, you know, bank and lending services. So people are exploring those options as well, you know, especially when you're not bringing a lot of capital and a lot of equity to a new business. That is, you know, something that can work for people. But really looking at that progression, and we have an interesting farm here in southern Vermont that, you know, they were in this situation that you were talking about, and they kind of found their place, and they started working on farms, making connections in the area and staying in one place. And through those connections, you know, they met an old farmer who leased them an acre of land, and from there it just, you know, different community members through their CSA got excited and offered them other pieces of land, which allowed them to expand. And, you know, those community connections, I think, are what's really vital in creating, you know, a vibrant farm business.
And this, so that the opposite, it's like the opposite of NIMBY. It's like, you know, you're asking of a community, you're asking that community kind of to help you find land, but you're offering to that community your services over the long haul in stewarding the land and watching for water quality and producing local food security. And so that, you know, it's almost like a bargain, like a community negotiation. Like, I'm committed here. Now you guys help me,
right,
you know, help me figure it out.
Yeah, and I have just, you know, I have to say, I don't know if Vermont is a unique place or if this is happening all over the country, but, you know, talking to new farmers, I've heard amazing stories about communities coming together to support new farmers, you know, either through offering land. With Hurricane Irene last year, we had one brand new farmer who literally lost their land. It was washed away by the river down to bedrock, all of their soil. And, you know, the community that came around to support them, offering them land, offering support, helping them find a new location was amazing. And, you know, other farms who, you know, have been on leased land and their the land has gone up for sale and the community has come together and worked with the Vermont Land Trust to help them purchase the land because the community didn't want to lose the farm. So I think that, you know, the power that those community connections have for new farmers is not to be underestimated. And also, just like you said, I think there's people see or are recognizing more the value of having a farm in their community. And like you said, the stewardship of the land and the water quality and the access to healthy local food, you know, that is a value that's being recognized and that I think farmers and community members are working together and acknowledging that the importance there. So, you know, that's a really important piece to remember.
Yeah, and so many times we're operating our businesses in the real world, in the real economy, and yet so much of what happens in agriculture is luck and weather and circumstance and a lot of it is non-monetary. And so I feel like it's very important to hear out of your mouth as a beginning farmer, service providing professional, you know, similar observation about the kind of magical force that is present when it's about, you know, young people and non-young people getting into farming. Okay, so, but that away from the magic, if people are interested in going into your program, but maybe they look at Vermont and they think, well, you know, Vermont is, it's just too easy. The legislators in Vermont are, you know, completely into sustainability. It's basically a mafia up there. How could there possibly be any market share, especially around Burlington? No way. I'm going to move to Arkansas.
Who have you been talking to, Severin? Yeah. What would we say to someone like that? You know,
yeah,
I think there
what's
are
your retort.
Yeah, there are niches everywhere, and I think, you know, one of the exciting things is just how creative and the entrepreneurial spirit that new farmers bring to their businesses. And we were talking to one, you know, farmer the other day, and he was just talking about, you know, he is planning his business. He's planning for change. He knows that the markets he has now aren't going to last forever, and he is constantly, you know, refiguring and bringing his creative spirit to his farm to offer what consumers want. You know, so I think there's tons of opportunity in Vermont and beyond. You know, I think that you know, we are definitely trying to create a hub here with our services for Vermont farmers, but a lot of the resources that we have online are our online classes. We have monthly webinars the last Tuesday evening of every month. There's a lot of information and resources online that farmers in any region can really take advantage of to help build their business. So, I think that the door is wide open for creative people to come to farming in Vermont and the surrounding area.
And what I'm waiting for is the states to start offering bounties we're doing research now for the Young Farmers Almanac, which is a publication for new farmers. And obviously the weather is changing, so our weather predictions are not predicted to be accurate, but some of the research has turned up materials from Alaska from the 19 10s and 20s, basically offering farmers a bounty to come and start dairy farms in Alaska.
Oh, interesting.
Because that had been identified. And I know that in some counties in Iowa, the local taxes are waived for farmland owners who lease their land to beginning farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of these new projects. What's going on? I know about the new Food Venture Center. I went and visited it in Hardwick. But maybe you could just give a little set of highlights of what's happening in Vermont in this young farmer space.
Yeah, I think the idea of incentives is strong, and there's some interesting work being done in the gleaning community to offer farmers incentive for donating their farm produce to food banks and food shelves and things like that. There are a lot of amazing things happening around food hubs in Vermont. There's a whole list of them, but there's a lot more energy. People really trying to facilitate the distribution of local farm products to Vermont communities and beyond, and also to facilitate creating value-added products that consumers are really looking for, again, in Vermont and beyond. And so these food hubs are becoming, you use the word magical, but kind of this magical place where, people with great ideas for value-added product come together with farmers who are creating really excellent farm, produce, and they're creating these products that are selling great. So, the food hub and the opportunity in Vermont around the food hubs, I think, is pretty exciting. I think that there also is a lot of effort going into educating the young farmer, the intern, and the apprentice. NOFA Vermont, the Northeast Organic Farming Association of Vermont, has a strong apprenticeship program. They've also initiated a journeyman farmers program, or a journeyperson farmers program, which takes people who are beyond the apprentice and gives them additional technical assistance and access to education to help support them in taking the next steps towards starting their farm business. So I think there's a lot of support available for people who are serious about starting a farm business here. And then we have, another, I think, excellent program that we have in Vermont is our Farm Viability Program. And that is geared towards farmers who are ready to write a business plan, to scale up, to do enterprise analysis, to really take their farm business to the next level. And that is provided by UVM Extension, as well as the Vermont Housing and Conservation Board, the Intervale Center, and NOFA Vermont. And it's one-on-one technical assistance for farm businesses for 18 months. And that program, I have to say, I think has been critical to the success of many farms in Vermont, and giving them the right technical information and assistance in business analysis that really allows them to become successful as well as sustainable. So,
the powerhouse of NOFA was made, NOFA Vermont was made clear to me when Pete of Pete's Greens had a barn fire, and I feel like in the course of a month, they raised, like, NOFA Vermont raised something like $3 million. Anyway, and they started a fund for other people's farms because other tragedies because they raised more than he needed.
Yeah.
But, I feel like we should just riff a little on this and talk about these kind of informal infrastructures that arise from the needs that are articulated by communities such as ours. And I was talking with my father this weekend about CSAs and kind of alternative economies, and mm-hmm. he said, "Oh yeah, well, the jazz came about or jazz musicians were supported because African Americans weren't allowed to have health life insurance. And so they had these life insurance societies, and they met every weekend and paid a little money into the fund that was basically a revolving loan fund for life insurance, and that the party was played by jazz musicians. So that the kind of armature of self-help and peer-to-peer lending also had enough kind of money mojo to support the cultural production of jazz and of the jazz musicians.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was such a good example of the kinds of, like, the right scale of infrastructure that we ourselves can invent and perpetuate in our own communities, and not only rely on the big banks to lend.
And I think, you know, several farmers I know have financed major infrastructure development and expansion of their businesses through their CSAs, through CSA members, you know, and they offer them, you know, some people get paid back in the bounty of the farm. Some people, you know, get paid back with interest over a certain period of time. But the access to capital farmers are finding can be right in their backyard, right in their community. And that's a very, again, another powerful note about, you know, staying in one place and building those connections and making that commitment, because I think the commitment will be returned to you. You know, we also have had farms in our area be really successful with Kickstarter campaigns. I'm sure you're aware of those, but we had one young farming couple who did a Kickstarter campaign and raised money to build rice paddies on their farm. They're experimenting with growing rice at a commercial scale now. So I think that is really exciting. And there's actually some local funds similar to Kickstarter that are starting based in Vermont to help initiate those kinds of projects as well. So, you know, I think that creative capital idea is great.
Super valuable, and if we're looking at towards the future at the kinds of cliffs, at the kinds of shifts and transitions in what kind of farming is happening on the land, and is it done sustainably? We're moving away from commodity. We're, you know, experimenting with new cropping systems and rotations, and, you know, tillage radishes, and, you know, there's a lot of innovation that will be required. And all of that means that some amount of venture, you know, venture investment and experimentation beyond the capacity of the experimentation stations of the land grants is certainly going to be a part of that equation. And I'm happy also to see a lot of willingness to try new things and to take that on. Another example, while we're on the finance topic, is the Bread and Butter Farm financed their new greenhouse construction with a local co-op. And basically the local co-op wanted to order more greens, and she said, no, we haven't got any more greens. And then they said, well, why not? And she said, well, because my hoop house fell over in last March. There was that terrible storm.
Yeah.
And she said, so sorry, you know, unless you wanted to buy me a new greenhouse, then you can have all you want. And then they called back 5 minutes later, and they're like, what would it cost to finance your greenhouse? And
right.
So she signed an agreement with them, and then they are going to get all the greens from her greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not forever, just for the first year.
Right. Yeah, well, I think that's a great example. And, you know, and I also think that as businesses grow and as farmers, you know, get past, you know, those first few years of farming are some of the, you know, the most expensive. Not only is there all the infrastructure investment and, you know, trying to access land, but it's also the time when you're making the most mistakes. You haven't figured out your efficiencies. You don't know what you're the best at growing and what you need to, you know, table for another time. And so it's, you know, it's pretty, not only is it risky, as any new business is, but it's just challenging to figure all of that out. And I think, you know, when I've seen farmers cresting over that, you know, still new farmers, we consider anyone, you know, with less than 10 years farming a new farmer. But when they crest out of that time period, then, you know, these investments, you know, getting the greenhouse, getting the tractor that's going to bring more efficiencies, it becomes more manageable within their own financial picture to make those investments to get a traditional loan or not, and grow their business that way. So, you know, I think different times in the business growth and structure, these different modes are really important. I think that it's, again, so exciting that farmers are using their creativity and communities are so supportive in trying to make this all work.
Well, I hope we can continue this conversation, because I am very hopeful that more and new ways for this, especially this startup phase, capitalizing in the startup phase, will arise. And that I just had a talk at the New Economies Conference, and the conversation just kept coming back to this issue. And how do we support this kind of entrepreneurship that we need to take fire? So we Greenhorns are working on a beginning farmer's guide to finance, and I'll love it if I could email you about it.
Oh, but, yeah, I would love to see that. And I'd encourage, you know, anyone out there to check out our guide to financing the community-supported farm, which is on our website. Can I do a plug here for the website?
It's, please, yeah, plug all your everything. Plug your thing.
All right, it's uvm.edu/newfarmer. That's where you'll find all of our resources, or you can just Google Vermont New Farmer Project, and it should come right up. But we do have a whole section on business management and financial information. You could find a lot of resources there, and some great case studies and stories about farmers and how they got going. And we're actually working on a great project this summer. We're going out and visiting farms and getting video talking about just this issue about how did they get started and how did they scale up to being, you know, full-time sustainable farmers. So we're hoping that we'll be putting that stuff on the web pretty soon, too, because we feel like those stories about, you know, how do people actually do it are so valuable for anybody who's interested in getting started.
For anyone who's interested in getting started, and also for their family, because every time I go home and have dinner with, you know, friends of family, every time they say, well, what's the economic viability? This just sounds like a fairy tale.
It's interesting,
I'm sick of telling them over. I want there to be I want it on MTV and NPR. I don't feel like it should be my job to also convince them, you know, especially in the beginning of where we're not, you know, my farm is not yet viable as a career, but
any new business,
thank you for doing
that. They say it's 5 years, you know, it's 5 years for any business to start cash flowing and to, you know, start seeing a profit. You know, it's that's like typical for any new business, and farming is no different. And I think, you know, I was actually reflecting on, you know, when I was interested in thinking about farming myself, and how there weren't a lot of good models out there. And now I feel like I was thinking about it. I'm like, oh my God, there are so many great models out there of really excellent farmers who are doing a really good job managing and are also, just like you said, economically viable. And I feel like, you know, those people who took the risk and really have made it work have really provided an excellent, you know, excellent ground for the future and for all these new farmers who are coming along to model their businesses on. So I think
the willingness to open up their books
future.
And be totally transparent.
Yeah.
Is, you know,
people
astounding
really want to share.
Okay, so we're very happy for all that you've shared, and we've run out of time. I'm sorry, I forgot.
All right.
And Jessica, and you can find her at the Vermont Beginning Farmer Project, and we're happy to know that the Brown Amendment was passed, and Beginning Farmer and Rancher program was saved for now, but we must all be attentive to the National Young Farmer listserv, because it's going to come up again in the House. And, no, wait, we went through the House, and now it's going through the Senate? Oh, golly.
I think the Senate, I think it was the reverse. I think the Senate maintained it. And
okay, well, both we all need to learn a lot more about how democracy works, because sometimes it doesn't work in our favor as Beginning Farm Program people. But if you're on the listserv of the National Young Farmers Coalition, you will get the message when to call in, and I hope you do so. I did so. And then the next day we got emails saying, oh, it worked. So the next time is in the next coming weeks. So be on alert. Okay, thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.